Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Freedom Radio listeners. My name is Minister Dunlap, and we welcome again to Freedom Radio. On behalf of our founder and our host, Sister Kimberly Skeen, we're so pleasured and glad that you are being able to just spend your time with us this evening. Here on Freedom Radio, the purpose of what we do here on Freedom Radio is really about resurrecting responsible dialogue, not only responsible dialogue, but respectable dialogue. This is the sixth show that we've had on this topic of diversity. And let me just tell you, if you have not had an opportunity to catch all of the shows in the entirety, we welcome you to go back and listen to the archives. All of the shows that we have are archived shows. We're here every Tuesday night from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we just thank God that you are with us this evening. Let me just tell you up front, tonight we have a guest, a good friend, a brother, family that is going to be joining us with us, and I'll do an introduction in a minute. But this brother has done some things in his life. This brother has experienced some things in his life which makes him a very, very well, more than capable guest to be on this show. So without further ado, let me just go through a couple of housekeeping items for everybody. One of the things is if you would like to add to the dialogue, if you have a question or a comment, we just ask that all you have to do is just press 1 on your dial pad. We'll see you, and we'll go ahead and get to your question as soon as possible. Tonight's topic is living with diversity. This is what we've been talking about every first Tuesday of the month, living with diversity. And in tonight's show, we're going a little bit deeper than where we were. If you've been around, if you've hung out with us, from the beginning, you will know that when we first started talking about this topic of diversity, we just talked about it from a general perspective. In every show, God has allowed us to go a little bit deeper into different areas that sometimes we just don't want to talk about because they may be uncomfortable, and we've discussed and shared a lot of reasons why we don't like to talk about this topic of diversity. So tonight, Freedom Radio listeners, we're going to be talking about interfaith dialogue. And tonight we have the pleasure of having with us Brother Saeed Abdul Kabir. Good evening, yes. My brother.
Hello, how are you? Good evening, everyone.
Let me just tell the listeners a little bit about you, brother. First of all, I know this brother for a long time in my life. He is the assistant director at Drexel University. He's a very well-educated brother. He has an undergraduate degree. He has a master's degree in business administration. He's currently working on another degree. He's a teacher. He's an adjunct faculty member at Harcum College. But most importantly, the main reason why he's on this show tonight is, one, because he loves God, and two, not to separate the two, is because he comes from a faith tradition that is different than mine. And so for me to be the host of this show and to talk about diversity, it can't always come from my perspective. And those of you who know me know that I am a minister. And it's okay that we communicate with other people. We communicate with those who are not like us. That's what this whole topic and theme of diversity is actually about. So, Saeed, go ahead, and if you have any opening comments, we'll go ahead and give you the floor briefly.
Well, I'd like to first thank you again for allowing this opportunity for us to have this conversation. As Nate, as I know him, and JR, as he's told me you out there in the audience know him, we've known each other for a number of years. We've shared in many both happy and sad moments throughout our lives, and it's been a pleasure to be able to reconnect with him. And I want to open up with saying, first and foremost, that I appreciate the opportunity to talk about my beliefs, but I would like to just, I guess, put a disclaimer out there. I'm not speaking for the whole of the religion, nor am I representing everybody's practices.
Right.
You know, I hope that the comments and statements that I make will hold true in a general sense, and there may be others who may agree and disagree on the actual applications of them. And I would like to continue with saying that, you know, I pray that God blesses the intentions of you and myself, and that our actions are pleasing to him, and that anything that good that comes from this is truly from God, and any mistakes and or harm that may come from this is from the weakness and the shortcomings of myself. So I pray that in the end we open up more dialogue for those to openly talk to those around them, to us, and to those who they have questions going forward.
All right. Well, we thank you. And I'm glad you gave that disclaimer, because I probably need to give that same disclaimer as well. But I think I've been on the show long enough to know that everybody knows this is Minister Dunlap or JR or Brother Dunlap. This is me speaking. And I speak with good intentions, and I also speak from the vantage point of letting God use me to say what needs to be said to his people. So let me ask you this, Saeed, and then we'll just get right cranking into what we want to talk about, or what we think we want to talk about today. What led you to accepting this invitation? And the reason I think that's important for the listeners to hear is because, again, we're talking about resurrecting responsible dialogue. And with this theme of diversity, a lot of times, or oftentimes, we won't connect or communicate with one another. We've given invitations to others on this show before, and some people are apprehensive about talking because they don't know what is going to happen. They don't know the intention. So what was it within you that said, hey, you know what, let me go ahead and accept this invitation to speak to the listeners of Freedom Radio?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say it was part because of the true love I have for you. But but I have to honestly say that, you know, I'm a true believer that if one is going to ever truly stand before God and pray that he gives his blessings on your actions, you have to be willing to reach out to others in both kindness and word and kindness and actions. You know, and to have the opportunity to hopefully maybe clear some of the misinterpretations of people when they look at the possibility for dialogue between interfaith religion, to open the door for people to see the similarities versus always focusing on the negative or the differences.
Right.
I couldn't turn it down. You know, I'm going to share something with you that happened to me today, and I think it represents why I was so happy with coming on board. There's a homeless person that I pass every day, and you know God has always said be charitable to others, and you know today I kind of went out of my way to make sure that he had something to eat, and brought tears to my eyes all the way to work. And it's not because of what I did, but because I was given the opportunity to do it.
That's good.
And because of that, you know, I'm walking, the sunshine is shining on me, and literally I had tears running down my eyes. And so it is in that same vein that I think that it was required. It's not even a matter of why I chose to do it. I don't think I had an option not to do it. It is what we should be doing as all children of God, of people who say they believe. If you believe in God, regardless of your practices, then you must open your minds and hearts to have that dialogue, and you have that opportunity to talk to each other.
That's right. And let me share this. I could tell you that there was I had an experience. It wasn't like yours, but I did have an experience.
And it was a couple of weeks ago, probably about 2 weeks ago, right before I actually called you and spoke to you about this. I was at a gas station going to work a couple of weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, and a young lady approached me. And the young lady approached me, wanted to provide me with some particular literature. And the lady was communicating to me about how important it was that I know the Bible, how important the Bible was, things of that nature. And I listened to her for a few minutes, and after she spoke, I let it be known to her that I was a minister and I did have a little bit of knowledge, and I don't say that facetiously, I have a little bit of knowledge about the Bible. And from there, I took it as an opportunity for us to engage in interfaith dialogue. And what I said to the lady was, I would accept your literature and I'll even read it. And I said, but let me ask you to do something. As I accept yours, could you give me a verbal that you would tune in to Freedom Radio and listen at some point? I didn't ask her to do it on Tuesday, this Tuesday or next Tuesday. And she asked me something that deals with her theology or her faith theology. And when I didn't respond in the manner that she thought that I should respond of how we communicate on this show, that was the shutting down point. And for me, Brother Saeed, that was the moment where I said, yeah, it's time for me to go ahead and have this discussion on Freedom Radio about interfaith dialogue, because it's been brewing for a while, at least 6 months. But I was really trying to wait until God opened up an opportunity for it to come at the right particular time. And I tell you about that experience, it was disheartening because it still let me know that there is a whole lot of work to be done. We cannot sometimes, or we don't sometimes, communicate with somebody who is outside of our own. And that's disheartening because there are a lot of issues in our communities that need men and women of God to address them. And men and women of God are very powerful and resourceful individuals for dealing with the sin that's going on in the world. And so that was my vantage point, so to speak, for actually bringing this particular show topic to light tonight at this particular time. So again, I'm glad that you are here and that you accepted the invitation, and that is not your mindset, that is not your heart, that we can communicate as men of God, not only family or friends or brothers, but as men of God, as all of God's creation. Let me say this to our listeners as well. One of the things that I want to make sure everybody understands tonight is our show tonight is intentional. So God is not going to allow us to go down a bunch of rabbit holes. God is not going to allow the show to go down to a place where individuals want to hear answers to questions that they already think they have the answers to. This is about opening up your mind. This is about letting God speak to you by what you hear from myself and Brother Saeed. So we're going to be intentional about the questions that we're asking. We do want you to be able to ask certain questions. We may or may not be able to get to them tonight on the show, but we will try to have them addressed because we have an hour or less than an hour now. We want to be able to get to some key points to make sure that we can, again, engage in a dialogue that's going to be productive. So Brother Saeed, let me go here. Can you tell the listening audience, what is it that, and if I say the wrong terminology, just get me straight, I know you'll do it in love, but what led you to Islam? And get me straight if you have to, because you know the terminology.
No. You said fine. You led me to Islam. I really think it was the burning desire for answers to questions. As you may or may not know, I was raised Christian, Methodist and Baptist, to be specific. My grandmother had us in church all the time. So, you know, and God rest, may God be pleased with her and offer her much rest and patience. And I was, as I got older, I had more questions that was not getting answered. Sadly to say, it wasn't getting answered in the church. it led to more questions. And in the end, I think the one deciding factor was at one point when I guess I asked one question too many, I was told you have to have faith. Mm. And there's nothing within my being that God created us on to just believe without having action and without having proof of his existence. You know, I remember the story of Abraham that I was taught, and it was when Abraham, before God revealed to him his presence, he was told, you know, Abraham was looking for guidance, and he looked up into the sky and he saw the moon and he said, "This must be my God." And then the moon set. And he said, "No, my God can never set." And then he looked up and he saw the sun and he said, "Oh, this must be my God." And then the sun set and he said, "No, this is not my God." And then God revealed to him that, "No, I am the one, and, you know, do not worship idols," and so forth. It's a story we're told in Islam, but it represents the kind of seeking that I was looking for. And I went on a long journey. I went on a 10-year journey, to be precise, of reading. I mean, from reading the Bible in many versions of it, and literally from front to back. I even studied Judaism for a while in regards to looking at the Torah and looking at how the differences of it being into the old, what we consider the Old Testament of the Bible. And it led me to also reading the Quran, which is the book of the Muslims. And in that process of learning and gathering information and rereading and re-questioning, my heart opened up to Islam because, and I will say this in the shortest way I possibly can for the lack of time, as a Muslim who practices Islam as a religion, and I say that to be distinctive because there are different groups that use Islam as a basis, but they do not practice the religion. So, but practicing Islam as a religion, I am taught to believe in God and his single power over all things, to believe in all of his books and messengers, and that they all came to offer man guidance, and to believe in the Day of Judgment, and to believe in God's power to control both your past, your present, and your future. So by doing that as a Muslim, which is some things that people may not know, is that we do honor Jesus in his glory of his miraculous birth, and we honor Abraham and Moses and Job and Lot and Peter and those of the prophets that we know in that we've learned of in the Old Testament and in the Bible. We're taught that we are to honor them and to understand that they are all part of a brotherhood that God sent to this earth. And that allowed for me to embrace what I've learned as a Christian, but also expand that into what I've learned as being a Muslim.
Wow. And two things that you just mentioned, you said honor and you said understand. Those two things, that leads to what I spoke about at the beginning about being intentional. You have to be intentional about honor. You have to be intentional about understanding. It's something that we pursue. It's not something that you just stumble on. So I'm glad that the words that God has given you to use are words that we all can relate to. Because as a Christian, honor is big. Our tradition as a Christian, especially in the Old Testament, honor and shame was very big in the Old Testament, very big in our history. Understanding. We always talk about, as Christians, I always talk about that we want to get understanding. We want God to give us understanding about what he's doing in our life. How should I go from here to there? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing? How can I be a better father when my daughter or my son does something that is not pleasing in God's sight or is not pleasing in my sight? Give me understanding of why this is going on
so that we can try to address it in the best possible way. Let me throw this out here as well. When we talk about interfaith dialogue, one of the things that came to my mind was the conversation has to be relevant. And by being relevant, what I mean is there's a whole bunch of things that we can talk about, Brother Saeed. We can, from a Christian perspective and from a Muslim perspective. But something that I learned in seminary was this: why ask why? So why ask certain questions that I already believe that I have the answer to if I'm not willing to receive the answer that you give to me? And the other part of that I would say is interfaith dialogue, I don't believe, is something that is relevant in every part of the country. If you lived in Iowa, where your population is only 300 in your town, interfaith dialogue is not something that's going to be pressing. But in a place where you live, brother, in Philadelphia, with the millions of people, in a place where I live in the Columbus, Georgia, Phoenix City, Alabama area, where we have 30,000 in our city and a whole bunch more across the bridge, we do have Christians and Muslims. And we don't communicate. We don't embrace interfaith dialogue, not to the level of where we are addressing certain things. So is it more relevant where you sit from your context, being in, quote unquote, the big city where the population is a whole lot greater?
I think the obvious answer is yes. And I would agree to disagree on one stage, and that I think that, yes, I do think that in smaller towns across the country and there, you know, the interfaith dialogue may not be as big of an issue. However, I think that we need to promote it nationally across all boundaries, because if we don't, then we open the door for misconceptions to seep in from all different ways. We've become a global world. I mean, you know, the world is shrinking, as they say, because of the internet and the fact that we can talk on the phone hundreds of miles away on a radio show. You know, your show is being streamed online. You know, right. We are in a point where even the person that may be in that little town in Iowa may not necessarily need to talk to his neighbor particularly about it, but
right.
They're exposed to it. And sometimes it's these little conversations that we have that will open the minds for many people. So, yes, it's relevant in the big city. We have so many different issues going on, you know, especially in the African-American communities where we have both churches and masjids, which is another word for mosque, literally next door to each other or, you know, down the street from each other. And we are all trying, I believe, I would like to believe, and, you know, the many people that I know that, you know, practice Christianity and the many people that I know that practice Islam, we're all trying to do the right thing, you know, as we see it. So, but how does that affect our community? You know, I'm very attuned because of my job, my job at Drexel and the things that I'm involved in. When I teach at Harcum, I'm teaching developmental math to those individuals who are trying to get a degree but didn't get the greatest high school education. So, you know, and honestly, most of them that are coming through don't practice the same religion that I do, but we have wonderful conversations. And lots of times they're very surprised that, you know, how common and how many similar things we have than what we have different. Because the first thing they'll say, oh, you're Muslim. You know, we brought in some food, but don't worry, it's not pork. And I'm like, thank you very much, you know. And it's like, well, can you eat? And, you know, about that. And I have so many wonderful students who contact me to this day who you know, they lovingly call me the professor, you know. And it's ironic, I will honestly say, believe it or not, the people who are most close to me in regards to my family, the lady in my life, you know, the people that I teach, most of them aren't Muslim. So, and in lots of cases, I am the only Muslim in the room. So, you know, so having these conversations are always relevant. I just think that it's relevant in any way, shape, or form. We need, you know, look at social media today. You know, Facebook is all over everywhere and everything. How often do we get into good conversations online? You know, we all want, you know, I just posted something, you know, this is a little bit off track, so please forgive me if it does, but there was a national report that, and this is not to be, but we're talking about diversity, so this is more about diversity than it is about ethnicity. But the comment that I noticed on the national news that, you know, it said white people are now the minority. And the statement in and of itself is not wrong, but the fact that the underlying implications is that it's still an us against them.
Mm.
It's still whites against everyone else. And I think that's not a good depiction if we're trying to move forward with diversity, colorblindness, and as well as understanding each other's religious and ethnical differences. We need to start looking at if whites are minorities, don't compare whites to everyone else. What's the ethnic makeup of our country now? We're probably very diverse. We're probably 30% X and 20% Y, and that's right. The kind of reports we need to be getting out so that people can have honest dialogue. Same thing with religion. And it's the same thing. It's like, you know, I'm curious that, you know, how did you get to be a minister? I want to know because I want to learn. I want to know that path you took. What did you learn so that maybe there's a book I can read that'll give me some more insight?
Well, you said a lot, and that's good. I could tell you being a minister was nothing that I sought after. I grew up. You probably didn't know this about me, but I grew up Catholic. Went to Catholic school, was an altar boy, the whole nine yards. That was my introduction to God. But why was that my introduction to God? That was my introduction to God because that's what my mother put me in. And that's the case with a lot of individuals. A lot of individuals are in certain religions or in certain denominations because that's where their family was in. Or because, just like you said, your grandmother took you to church every Sunday. Well, if she was whatever she was, that's where you went. So it was the same way with me. I stepped away from it for a lot of years, and I didn't come to really know Christ until about the year 2000. And I'm glad I have my daughter in the studio with me because she has never heard this story. She has, it's because of my daughter, Tally, which is why I'm a minister today. And let me say it like this. Me and her mom were not together at the time. And Tally came to live with me for a while. And she was about 3 years old. And when she came to stay with me, one of the things that I wanted to make sure was that she continued to go to church because I know her mother had her in church. And so by virtue of being connected with the young lady at that time that was able to take her to church, and that's all I wanted. I wanted her to go to church. I wind up starting to go to church. I wind up starting to get a closer walk with God. It was a slow process, but that's what started the process. For me, just trying to live a good life. Again, ministry was not a part of the process. But to fast forward it, because of the sake of time, what led me into the ministry was seeing hurting people, bruh. That was it. And what I was seeing people hurting was in the area of their finances. I, too, had some of the similar type of questions that you had. Why are there so many hurting people in the church? Why are so many struggling people in the church? If all of this being a part of the Church of Jesus Christ is good, this is where I'm supposed to be, why are things as hard as they need to be? And one of the things that God really instilled in me was that there needs to be individuals that can help people walk through their journey. So for me, I'm very intentional about communicating to individuals that I am a minister. I'm not a preacher, even though I can preach. But I'm a minister. It's about addressing the needs of hurting people and allowing God to actually use me in that area. And finances is the number one thing that I've saw also from a professional standpoint. Professionally, I was involved in individuals all the time that were going through financial problems. And financial problems was causing them to do bad things, which my career, my profession in law enforcement, which a lot of people don't know about, that's what we were dealing with a lot of times, people having financial problems or being greedy. So by being greedy, going after things that they could not afford or could not have or should not have, that brought them to a case to my desk. And after a while, God used that area that I had so much knowledge about to be able to try to help the kingdom of God, to help people in the church. And it really just blossomed from there into what we're doing today.
Nice.
And again, that's the short version. We know we only got an hour, but I'm glad you asked it, because oftentimes, Brother Saeed, what I've experienced is when we approach somebody from a different faith tradition, I know that that Christians, a lot of times, we have a motive. We want to see people saved. That's what we believe in. So when we encounter somebody who is not a Christian, we want them to receive the salvation of Jesus Christ because that's what we believe. But here's the thing. We have to do like Jesus did. We have to meet people where they were. So the conversation can't be about your salvation first and foremost. I know a lot of ministers won't agree with me, but that's okay. But I know that that's just not how we reach people, just by saying, look, Brother Saeed, you really need to leave Islam alone, and you really need to turn your heart and your mind over to and your soul over to Jesus Christ for your salvation of your sins. If that's the type of conversation that we're coming to people with, there's no reason, I understand why we don't have a lot of interfaith dialogue. What do you say?
I will agree, and it made me think about something that we're taught in Islam, and that is there's no compulsion. There is no compulsion in religion. There should be no compulsion in religion, and there is no compulsion in Islam, meaning that, you know, we can offer our opinion, we can offer the proof, we can offer the word, as you know, as it is said, as using a Christian term, we can offer it, but it is truly up to that person to accept it and to go forward. So it is not something that we believe should be forced upon anyone. So yes, as a Muslim, I'm going to be honest with you. Everyone I know, based upon my belief, I want them to eventually accept Islam.
Right.
You know, but for me, it is more about me trying to present myself in a manner that represents Islam in a positive light than it is for me to try to convince you that it's the right way. A perfect example is the lady in my life. She is Christian. I accept it. You know, when we met, we talked about our differences, you know, and we always think it comes up in conversations here and there. But even though I am the man of the household, and I do not force my belief onto her. She does not have to do anything that is outside of what she believes is right and wrong. Because in my heart, I believe that if God wants her to follow this path, then he will lead her down that path by my actions and by my kindness and by the fact that I try my very best to live up to the tenets for which I believe. So, and that's how we do it. She goes to church every Sunday. She goes on, she does a special ministry, or I'm not really even sure exactly what it is. I know she's listening, so hopefully she forgives me, but she goes on Wednesdays. And she volunteers, and, you know, she's gone from Sunday morning to Sunday afternoon. And, you know, she shares with me of things, and, you know, there's some sadness there. I have to honestly, there's some sadness because, you know, the sadness comes in because there's some things we would love to share with each other, but out of the respect of each other, we know that there's some guidelines, you know, there's some boundaries we just won't cross only because of the uncomfort that it causes the other person. But, you know, but we know we love each other, and, you know, we work through the things that we need to work through. Is it going to last forever? Only God knows. You know, will our religion be, our religious beliefs become that elephant in the room? Probably. But how we deal with it, I think, was going to be a testament to both of our faiths.
Wow. Well, let me just take a quick minute and just, I see a lot of people on the switchboard that are listening to the show right now, and we thank you so much for sticking with us through this first half hour of the show and listening and letting your minds and your hearts be open and receptive to what God is speaking through the both of us. So we just truly thank you and honor you for being with us today. If you do have a comment or a question, just press 1 on your dial pad, and we will get to you as soon as we possibly can. We also want to ask you to go to the We Speak Association Network page, whether by Facebook or through Blog Talk Radio, and we ask that you like the show. So if you look right under the icon, you'll see a picture of a young lady, Shelley Caldwell. She is the founder of the We Speak Radio Association, and right underneath there is a button that says follow. And if you will be so kind, just go there, click the follow button. You'll be able to get emails about when upcoming shows are there, and it also tells Blog Talk Radio that you're interested in the type of topics and discussions that we're having on the Freedom Radio Network. Brother Saeed, let me tell you about an experience that I had, and I think it's maybe you can help me to understand it or help some others understand it. Last year I had an opportunity up in Atlanta, Georgia, to participate in an interfaith dialogue. And one of the places that we went or visited was the 14th Street Mosque in Atlanta. And there was a very, very good understanding of respect there. You used that word earlier. It was a very good understanding of respect and honor for entering that place of, place of worship is the right terminology, but what would you say is the right terminology so I can get it right and keep going?
I think that's fine. Place of worship would suffice, yes.
Okay. So we had a very good understanding of how to approach that place of worship. And all of us were, pretty much all of us were Christians. We all were coming from different denominations, and a couple may not have been Christians. Some of them, you know, never said, so we didn't know. But when we went inside of the mosque, there was a couple of things that we had to do that really just impressed me. And it impressed me because they gave us understanding of why the certain things that were done. And I know you know what I'm talking about, so I don't jack it up. Could you just explain how y'all as Muslims approach worship so they get an understanding, can hear it better from you versus me chopping it up with my personal experience?
Well, I think that, you know, the thing that comes to mind, and this is going to probably shock many people, both my Muslim friends, if they're out there listening, as well as some of the anyone who are listening, is the thing that came to mind was cleanliness is the godliness. It is a term that my grandmother used at everything. Wash your hands, boy. Cleanliness is next to godliness.
Right.
And it is ironic. It is through Islam that I truly understood what that meant. Mm. A Muslim entering into prayer is a holistic event, a holistic act. It is an act that is imparted upon both your body and your actions and your heart. So entering a masjid, you enter saying the words in the name of God. You enter it in such a way that you want to enter it into the purest and cleanest state you can possibly be. We remove our shoes because you do not want to track dirt from outside into a place of worship. We ritualistically wash, you know, our face and our hands, you know, and our feet to make sure that we're entering. And the reason we wash our face is because it is to clean the dirt off of the world for which we've come in contact. We wash our hands to remove the dirt. And some of it is more symbolic than actual, but we wash the dirt off of our hands for the things that we've touched that may or may not be pleasing to God. We wash our feet to clean us of our way from where we've walked as we traveled the earth during that day or that minute or hour. You know, and when we enter into it, we enter into it as a place of reverence, because there is no better communion with God than what you do with God and yourself. You know, and it reminds me, and I'll say this with most honor, it reminds me of the story of when Jesus was praying. You know, oftentimes he would go off and commune with God by himself. You know, so it is the group prayer that adds communion to the community, but it is that reverence of God as you walk into a place of worship that is so significant to a Muslim, because for a Muslim, Islam is a way of life, meaning so God, we're taught that God is a part of everything you do, from the time you wake to the time you go to sleep. The fact that you wake every day is a blessing from God. Every aspect of what we do, how we eat, how we sleep, how we walk, how we dress, how we interact, you know, what we say in the open and what we say in private, what we do in the open, what we do in private is all being recorded by God's angels, and it's going to either count for us or count against us. So entering into a place of worship, especially a masjid for a Muslim, is a part of the actual worship itself. Just going in and praying there is part of worship. Even, you know, so it starts from the moment you step in to the moment you leave.
Wow. And I'm going to say this. I've been in a lot of churches, quote unquote, in my day. And one of the things about it, I never felt that type of reverence going into a place of worship as I did when I went into the 14th Street Mosque. And I thought that was, for me, that was amazing. And I really wish, from our perspective, that we could see that more as Christians. Because I could tell you, as a Catholic, growing up Catholic as a young boy, it was that same type of reverence. But I have not seen that type of reverence as an adult, and especially as a minister, from a broader perspective, in all of the many churches that I've gone into. And I think what is so important for that for me is that we as Christians can learn something from Islam about that. How we truly reverence God's house is important. If you never step into a church, then you don't know it. But those of us who go to church, Brother Saeed, in certain areas, we see it. We understand it, and sometimes we don't give the reverence. I'll just be honest with you. We don't give the reverence to God's house as we should. So this interfaith dialogue that we're going through and conversing on right now, I hope that everybody can see that there's things, it's not about converting one to another or converting the other. It's about listening to what the experience is of another and what are some things that are good that we can take from it? Because how can anybody say that we should not, as Christians, be doing the same thing, that we should not be, that Christianity is not a way of life? No Christian would tell you that Christianity is not a way of life. It is a way of life. Cleanliness is next to godliness. I've heard that over and over and over again as well. And the terminology that I would use, or that we would use, is stewardship, you know. Take care of your house. Take care of your cars. You know, the way that you represent the things that God has provided to you is a representation of how you feel about God, the one who actually gave it to you.
I agree.
Go ahead.
No, I just said I agree. I think that, you know, every breath we take, every dollar we make, every piece of morsel we put in our mouth, you know, the fact that we have bills to pay, because if you didn't have the bills to pay, you didn't have a house to live in, you know. And so I think we should be reverent of every aspect of what God has given us, you know. And I will honestly say, you know, as a Muslim, there are some things that, you know, that, you know, some Muslims will, and again, I don't think everyone will agree with this, and I will probably, but there are some aspects of we get too regimental that we forget that there is a sensitive and caring side to what we should be doing as well. You know, I thank God that I came through the Christian faith in regards to understanding of Islam, because I'm not saying I do, I'm not, trust me, I'm not saying I practice it better than everyone else, because I'm far from perfect and I'm far from better. I'm still learning. I'm probably an infant in regards to what I know. But there's a part of my heart that is thankful that I learned compassion, and this is not to say that Muslims aren't compassionate, but there's that kind of touchy-feely, and this is hopefully people take this in the lightheartedness that I'm meaning it, but there's a touchy-feeliness about Christianity that doesn't always play out in being a Muslim. And sometimes I miss that touchy-feely aspect of it, you know. So it is nice to be able to have that conversation and know, you know what, you can practice any religion with full sincerity and still accept and draw in good practices from others.
I agree. There was something that, and I don't know if anybody else, nobody has actually press one on a dial pad, so I'll keep going. And this is the way a lot of these shows are, which is a good thing. Sometimes we just need to be able to listen. Could you speak to maybe misconceptions or clarifications that may be out there regarding a woman being required to cover or a particular dress code for women, if there is one?
Well, where the biggest misconception is that there's a myth that there's a dress code only for women. I think that if we start with an understanding that the dress code of modesty, and that's really what the code is. The dress code is modesty. And a woman, a Muslim man and a Muslim woman are instructed to dress and cover to be modest. And modest dress means cover those areas that will attract unwanted gaze and attention. That, you know, the dawning of the flesh is attraction. Women were created for procreation and to come together. Know that. This is why this is life. You know, but the only true relationship, and we can look through Christianity, you can look through Judaism, you can look through Islam, is marriage. And for men and women to, you know, people may disagree, it's the new age, it's new time, you got to live together before you know people, but if you follow God, I have not read a Bible passage yet that said you can have a non-marital relationship. I haven't read a scripture in any book. So for a Muslim man and woman, we are told to cover, so that our beauty is only displayed for those who should see them. That is our husbands and wives, our family members, and so forth. So people will debate, should a woman cover her head or not? Should she wear an overgarment or not? I'm not going to get into, for time, as well as for, it is a debate that we could go on for hours. Sure. I'm going to get into the yes and the no. But the book does say that a woman should cover to protect her modesty, protect her place. And I have to say this one. You know, women have been covering throughout history. The uncovering is really more a modern adaptation. Look through history. Look through history, social history and religious history. Women covered the religion. I remember back when, even with my grandmother, a woman didn't go to church with a hat on her head. She didn't go to church with a hat on her head, and she didn't go to church without something covering, you know, her legs. And does that mean that they were wrong or right? No, it was just a modesty. They had reverence and respect for what they looked like out in the street. The one last thing, you know, does anyone ever question why a nun covers? No, because it is assumed that because a nun covers, it's because she's worshiping God. Well, that same assumption or same truth is why Muslim women cover, because they have a reverence of God.
And you know what? I think that's very, you brought up a good point. I think that's very, very interesting that we never even, we never say anything about nuns covering up. Only time we really, that I've heard about it as being an issue or something that somebody really wants to know an answer to, or really wants to be debatable about, is with the Muslim religion.
Well,
I'm glad you pointed that out. At least for me, again, I haven't heard the distinction between the two during debates from individuals or questioning from individuals. And that to me, that says something about what we're accepting of and what we're not, what religion we're accepting of and what we're not. And then it also brings the question of, who is accepting of the nun being covered versus who is not accepting of the Muslim woman being covered?
I think in part we have to blame media and, you know, prejudice and fears. But in the end, you know, if one is an acceptable acceptable practice of worshiping of God, then I think it should be something that we all come to accept. You know, that women can choose and, you know, because of their belief and their desire for God. Now, are there some, and I'm going to say this as a disclaimer, just putting it out there are some cultures around the world where the women's choice is not as open as it is. However, that does not distract from what the religious obligation is. I want to keep that as a distinction, because sometimes people place cultural norms and make them religious norms, and that's not the truth.
Right, you're right. And to be perfectly honest, when we look at our women in society today, that is something that we really should be, maybe we can speak out about that. And I think a Muslim speaking out or having that understanding, and me as a Christian speaking out about it, I think that just helps society. I think that helps our young ladies. I have a 15-year-old daughter sitting next to me. I don't want men gazing at her. She's 15, and she's tall. She looks like, you know, she's about 17, 18 years old. But I don't want that. So if it takes her listening to what you said, that this is about modesty, this is what the Muslim religion teaches, I'm okay as her father. I'm okay as a man of God. I'm okay as a minister, her hearing that. I think that helps bridge these gaps that we have, it breaks down these barriers, because sometimes we need other voices to be able to help us in areas that we think we have all together. Brother Saeed, let me just take a pause right now. We have a caller on the line that wants to make a comment. So caller, last 4-8-4-8-2, go ahead with your comment or your question.
Hi, I'm actually Saeed's daughter.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. I just was listening to what you were saying, and I guess for me, like, being 21 and being Muslim, because, you know, I had my moments where I wasn't covering and I was, you know, trying to be like my friends and everything, and I was actually uncomfortable, like, all the attention, because, I mean, we have to face it, like, God saved us and wanted us. So me being Muslim and covering again and, you know, not showing my body and not wearing things that are revealing is actually a comfort for me, because I don't feel like I have people watching me, or I don't feel like, you know, I'll be a girl on the news who is missing. So, like, I was agreeing with what you were saying about, you know, your daughter and everything, because I was 15 once, and I wanted that attention. But I guess maybe being older now and understanding their religion more, it's like, it sucks. You have somebody screaming at you from halfway down the street. So, to me, a lot of times, being Muslim is like a protection. It's like, it's kind of like a personal security guard walking around with you all the time.
Wow. I think
you get a lot of respect being Muslim. You do, like, especially a Muslim woman. Like, they you get a different type of, people look at you different. You get a different type of respect.
Well, we thank you. Thank you, caller. Brother Saeed, I could say that that should make you feel real good as a father, huh?
Yes, and I didn't have her to call in, so.
You didn't text her to tell her to call in, did you?
I didn't text her to call her to call in, but no, it did. I mean, and as I was, it's ironic that you made the statement about your daughter, because I was literally about to ask you that question. You know, as a father, as a man of God, you know, what would you want to see your daughter walking down the street in, or, you know, or not walking down the street in? You know, and what do you think is acceptable? And I'm not saying, and don't get me wrong, my daughter will, can, you know, I don't want to, we have, for sake of time, I don't want to, you know, take, I'm not monopolizing any time, but I don't even force on my daughter covering. I hope that she does it on her own, but I do remind her that, you know, she's a shapely young lady, and men and are going to be attracted to that. We can't stop that. There's nothing in the world that we can stop our natural desire to look at women, or women to even look at men. It's not just one way. So how do we keep people look to respect our intellect first, our mannerism second or first, whichever way you want to put it, and then we start looking at our physical attributes? You know, women fought for years to be, to have equal rights. And I think that they should, and they should be respected, and they should be given the respect, all the due respect that they should. And as a Muslim, we are told that there is no better honor than to honor the mother and to honor your wife, the women in your family. They should be put on a pedestal in regards to their purity and their protection. But to do that, we also have to take ownership of how we present ourselves in public, how we present ourselves to our neighbor, to our, to the grocery store, to the workplace. And if you are opening the door for people to be distracted by your physical beauty, you can't always say that you're getting, you know, a respectful response from the public and those around you.
And you're right, brother, and I can tell you, I share those same sentiments. I can tell you something funny, and as we wind down these last 2 minutes, when my baby got off the plane, she had these shorts on, and she's about 5'8", and she had these little shorts on, and she's looking at me crazy right now, but she knows how I am. And I looked at those shorts, and I just said, oh, my goodness. And then I texted her mother, and I said a little something to her mother about the shorts. And she said, well, I'm just getting you back for the bikini that you sent her back with a couple of years ago. And that made me think about it. I said, you know what? She was right. You know, we have to be truly, truly careful. And I'm a father, so my daughter knows that, Italian knows that I freak out a little bit. She said a lot. Amen. That's true. Because I want nothing but the best for her. I don't want her having to live, to be perfectly honest, I don't want her having to go through men that did, I don't want her to have to go through men that, like me, like I used to be with women. I don't want her to experience that pain, because I realize now the pain and the hurt that I have caused women in my past. So I don't want her to have to experience that. So that's why I give her those talks. I talk to her and let her know that it is all about love. So, Brother Saeed, we have about 30 seconds left. So I just want to say, brother, I thank you so much for being on the show with us, for gracing us with your presence.
for allowing the individuals to hear from your heart, not from only your heart, but from your intellect as well. So thank you, Brother Saeed. Maybe we can do this again at another show.
Absolutely. Whenever you want, feel free to ask.
All right.
For having me on as producers and all the group stuff.
All right, brother. God blessings to you, man. And we will connect again very, very soon. And to all of our listeners on Freedom Radio, we thank you so much for listening and sharing your time with us this evening. Tune back in with us next week, next Tuesday, 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. God bless you and good night.